ahead and take the speed up your number one now, runway 27 clear to land green dot. Welcome to Oshkosh, guys.
Hello and welcome to the Green Dot, EAA's podcast for anyone and everyone who loves aviation. The Green Dot, sponsored by Crew Chief Systems. I'm one of your hosts, Hal Bryan. I'm EAA's managing editor for print and digital content and publications. And over there across the table, having made the transition from guest to host for her very first time, it is
Grace Jakober with the EAA Chapters Office.
Excellent. And as I said, her first experience on the show was as a guest, and now she's moved around to the other side of the microphone. And she had a great idea, and it was something that, as I was just saying before we started, I can't believe that none of us had ever thought of it, but that's the benefit of bringing fresh eyes to something, and that is to welcome Paul Freeman to the show. Paul, who in our world is perhaps best known for the abandoned and little-known airfields website. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, really, really glad to have you. And as I have suggested in the past, you and I have corresponded, and I know Grace has submitted content and things for you as well. We're big fans. So let's start at the beginning a little bit. This site is has been around for quite a while, since I believe 1999, correct?
Correct. Yeah, 1999. That's right.
And that's a few years younger than eBay. It's 7 years older than YouTube. Well, it's older than you.
It's Grace. 1 year older
it's
than
1 year
me.
It's 1 year older than my co-host. we'll just set that aside for right now. Well, I feel old. But Paul, what led you to starting this site in the earlier days of the internet in particular?
Yeah, so I'm a private pilot and I'm an aerospace engineer as far as my day job. And I've always been an aviation nut ever since I was a little boy. I always knew that I was going to be a pilot and was going to do something professionally involving aviation. At the same time, I've always been a history buff as well. So this site combines two of my passions of aviation and history. And the way that it came about was that once I started my private pilot training in 93, that was the first time that I had ever really studied aeronautical charts. Even though I had been reading aviation books and magazines since I was a little kid, I had never really opened up a sectional chart before that. And I've also always been a map buff, even though I didn't necessarily really know that. So once I started my private pilot training, I was really fascinated by the charts because that was really a new world to me. And I started looking on them. And of course, you know, those of you who are old enough will remember what paper charts used to be, not looking at ForeFlight on an iPad. So, you know, you probably remember that skill of sitting in a Cessna 152 and trying to open and refold a paper chart. So anyway,
I still carry paper charts on any cross country. That's, you know,
I sure hope we all do.
Well, that's great to hear from another generation because I, you know, love the technology and early adopter and all that kind of stuff. But I also, I've spent enough time working in technology to see it fail in a lot of interesting and scary ways. So,
oh yes.
Anyway, you're among friends with paper charts.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. So how this really started was once I started studying sectional charts, VFR charts, I would notice the abandoned airfield symbol that is not very common on charts, but, you know, is on the legend there and would show up, you know, every once in a while somewhere. And that would really spark my curiosity in terms of, oh, I wonder what is there, both for a safety perspective and also for a historical perspective. And, you know, obviously there's no label on the chart for an abandoned airfield. It just shows that symbol with no name or anything. So what really got me started on this journey to make the website was once the internet and the World Wide Web started to happen, and there were websites that showed aerial photos or that showed maps on the web. You know, that gave me the ability to open up my paper chart, find that abandoned airfield symbol there, and then go to an aerial photo or a map on a website and try to see either what is there currently or maybe what used to be there. And in the early days of the web, there was a site that was sort of a predecessor of Google Maps or MapQuest. There was a site that Microsoft hosted called Terra Server.
I remember it well.
Yeah, okay. So it had aerial photos that in some cases weren't necessarily terribly up to date they weren't intentionally intended to be older photos, but you know, they didn't necessarily have a constantly updated set of data like a Google Maps does today. And they also had USGS topo maps. And once again, it wasn't really intended to have historical topo maps, but they had a couple different zoom levels of them. And I found that when you zoomed from one level to another, often it would shift to a different source topo map and it would show the date. And sometimes they were a decade or two older, just not intentionally. So that really gave me the ability, kind of like a time machine, to step back in time. And of course, you know, today, you know, decades later, there are websites out there that do intentionally show older aerial photos or older maps. But that necessarily wasn't what TerraServer was. It just happened to be an unintended consequence of the data that they happened to have on there. So in some cases, I would find an older topo map that would show the name of what this airport used to be. And then I could switch to the photo and I could see, either there still is a runway there, or in some cases, no, there's just townhouses and condominiums there now. But that really did pique my curiosity once I started to realize what some of these used to be. So then the other ingredient that allowed me to start the website was that my internet hosting provider back then, like many of them did or still do, along with your internet service, they gave you a free amount of storage space and bandwidth for a free personal website that I'm sure, the vast majority of people never take advantage of. But just as a lark, I thought, instead of just putting up, pictures of my kids or something like that, I'll put together a little website to see if I can do it and to put together some information about some of these former airports that I've found. And of course, I never thought anybody would look at it because this was, sort of a niche of a niche, combining a couple of my personal interests. And I thought, surely nobody would ever look at it. But I put my email address up at the top of the entry. And I live in Northern Virginia. I live west of Washington, near Washington Dulles Airport. So I initially started putting entries on there about former airfields that I could find on the Washington sectional in my local area. And it was centered on my own geographic area. Well, very quickly, to my surprise, I started getting emails from people, from perfect strangers, who somehow had blundered onto my site. And, to this day, I still don't know how they even blundered onto it, because I can't imagine that Google or Yahoo or some of those other early search engines were indexing my site. But somehow they did. And I started getting emails from people who would say, that's the airport that I learned to fly at. Or in some cases, when I would have like a former military field, I would get people saying, that's where I was trained to fly in the military, or that's where my dad was trained to fly in the military. And people would start sending me their own pictures that they had from their own archives, which was really awesome. And then pretty soon people would say, well, what about this airfield? Why don't you have this former airfield covered? It's in another state and so forth. So I started adding new entries covering other areas other than just my own local area. So I started adding additional states, still thinking that it would always just be centered on where I happen to live. But I was just amazed by how many people that it really seemed to have struck a chord, that how many people would send me info about former airfields, often with sentimental attachment that this is the airport that I learned to fly at, and now it's been built over by houses. So the material that I put up there started to snowball more and more and more. And I was adding additional states, and eventually it got to the point where I had a top-level index on airfieldsfreeman.com, which is the address of the main menu of the site, to the point where, now it covers all 50 states. And that didn't take too long before it did cover all 50 states from when it started in 1999. And like I said, initially, the site just covered, I don't even know, two or three former airfields when I first put it up on the web. But eventually it's grown to the point where now it covers 2,800 some wow. airfields in all 50 states.
That's incredible.
And yeah, thanks. And I can't take credit for it all myself, not even close, because like I said, very quickly I was getting material sent to me And then eventually, I started getting a couple of people who really became core contributors. They were really like-minded aviation history buffs. And it really amazed me that, you know, I thought this was a bizarre little niche that, you know, nobody else would care about. But I found that there were other people out there that, in addition to being aviation buffs, that this really struck a chord with them. And I have a couple ladies or gentlemen who have been sending me material for almost the whole 26 years that the site's been in an operation. And that's really been a really unique aspect of the web, because, you know, in some cases there are people that I really feel like I know them and we correspond via email really frequently, but I've never actually had a phone conversation with them. I don't even know what their voice sounds like, but I really feel like I know them because we've had a lot of email interaction back and forth. But on the other hand, luckily, I have been able to meet some of them. It's given me the ability that, you know, there's a couple of people that even though they live in California or Iowa or Florida or all over, through business travel or vacations or what have you, I have been able to meet up with some of these people and meet them face to face, which is awesome, because some of them have really been dedicated researchers and writers and have sent me, you know, an amazing amount of material. And some of them have really developed huge archives of their own of former sectional charts and aerial photos and things like that, and have become very adept at data mining the USGS website and other websites that are central sources for me. So that's really been fantastic that I've had so much help along the way. So at this point, I'm really just the editor and the orchestrator as opposed to the author, because you know, there's probably a small minority of the material on the site anymore that I have actually originally directly written or have found the images for.
You've done a fantastic job at compiling so much information, and it's a really great archive for people like Hal and myself who are also big history buffs, and we really enjoy researching history of long-lost airfields and kind of figuring out what used to be, even in an area that might not look anything like an airport today.
Yeah.
And this website has impacted me so much. And I mean, you're calling me out almost, because now I have all these sectional charts that I keep on my bookshelf and all these other books and airport directories. And it was the first thing I actually did when I moved to Wisconsin was I went to the antique store and I found a airport directory from 1970 of Wisconsin.
Wow.
And then, you know, somebody here at EAA was nice enough to be like, oh, here's a 2024 one. So now, wow, I get to cross compare, and hopefully I'll be able to contribute something to your website additionally here. But if you have a moment that you think about, did you realize that this website might be a little bit bigger than just kind of your personal archive? And, you know, like you're discussing about the uniqueness of that corner of the internet. Did you have a moment where you realized that a lot of people were coming to you and you felt like this might actually have some importance, you know, 26 years down the road to people like Hal and I?
Yeah, definitely. I've had people who, you know, we all know that in general aviation in particular, they're not making any more airports. And I know, you know, AOPA has done articles, and I'm sure EAA has done as well, about the trend of losing GA airports in particular, you know, with our country becoming more and more populous and land becoming more valuable. You know, that's been a real battle. So the thing that really struck me and that really motivated me to continue investing more time in the site was when I very early on had a couple people tell me, you know, sometimes it was a humorous, ironic anecdote, but then they would emphasize how important it was. I would have people say to me, you know, my house is actually built on a former airport, and I had no idea. My neighborhood is built on a former airport, and I've always had to drive to the opposite side of town to get to an airport to go flying. And it turns out that, you know, my house is sitting on what used to be a runway. And I've had people, so that was the ironic part. But then I've had people tell me that once they realized things like that, and once they've seen how many airports we've lost on my site, either in their own metro area or all over, that it really has motivated them to get out there and to do what they can to support the airports that we still have, whether that's like attending a zoning hearing, you know, or other local government interaction or what have you, to try to arrest the rate at which we're losing them. And I tell people, you know, I'm never happy when somebody tells me that a new former airfield has quote unquote qualified for my site, because, you know, that's a pretty constant thing when somebody will send me an email saying, oh, this airport is slated for closure, you know, and the news articles have pointed that out, or they've heard about it through word of mouth. So that's sort of the political aspect, that I put that in air quotes, so to speak, that it really has motivated people, myself included, to try to do what they can to support the grassroots airports that we still have, because in many cases, they really are threatened by property taxes and development offers and things like that. So it's not just the historical sentimental reason, but it, you know, it really is a really more serious motivation that does inspire some people.
You know, there's a lot of sort of profound thoughts in what you've just said there. So number one, you know, there's not many people who have websites who, you know, maybe dream of some perfect world where you never have to add anything again because, hey, we stopped getting rid of airports. And we know that's not going to happen, but that's kind of fun to dream. You don't hear a lot of people in the tech world on the web saying, boy, I wish my website wouldn't expand anymore. But that's back there. And then the other thing too, you mentioned earlier that it was 2,800 airports documented on there. And that's, you know, that's scary and fascinating and depressing. And it's all these different emotions. It's, if there's a silver lining, or at least a slight one to me, it is a testament that to how strong aviation is in this country, that, you know, we are still going strong, that, you know, we need to advocate, we need to keep airports open, you know, God willing, we need to build some more. But it is amazing to think that there's enough aviation in this country that we've lost that many airports and it is still going strong. I mean, how many countries around the world could lose 2,800 airports and have any flying left, certainly on the private and recreational side? It's been a long time since I've looked at the numbers. You mentioned TerraServer, Paul, and I was at Microsoft working there on flight simulation stuff when TerraServer was a going concern, and they were just down the hall from me for a while. So I used to always go. There's not much to see. It's like, look, a server farm, but it was still kind of a cool thing to watch and see. And at that time when we were modeling airports and flight simulation, it was something like 25,000 around the world and 18,000 in the U.S. And I think that number was maybe a little bit on the low side in the country, but anyway, it is remarkable to think about 2,800, you know, what an airport means, and that, you know, half mile or mile of runway that can take you anywhere, as the saying goes, and to think 2,800 of them are gone.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know at one point, I knew you mentioned the statistic of like 17 or 18,000, and I had 19,000 in my head that I know at some point, maybe a couple of years ago, I saw the statistic that there were like 19,000 some registered FAA airfields, including both public and private use. And that statistic always really does surprise non-aviation people, because I do get a lot of people writing into my website who aren't necessarily pilots or aren't necessarily, you know, really core aviation people. Sometimes they're just local history buffs in their town. And you know, they're always very surprised. And usually the theme is general aviation airports kind of fly below the radar, if you ignore the pun, with people who are not aviation people. Because to a lot of the 99% of people out there that don't have a pilot's license, an airport is somewhere where you take an airline flight. And, you know, sometimes, you know, they just, an airport that doesn't provide airline service is just invisible to a lot of non-aviation people. And it is sometimes funny, because I will have sometimes I'll have somebody from a local historical society that'll write to me, or sometimes somebody who is an aviation person will say, here's a point of contact with the Springfield Historical Society, and they'll have some information for you about the former airport that I'm telling you about. And the ironic thing is, this has happened to me so many times. So I will write back to that local historical society and I'll say, so can you give me some information about the Thompson Airport that used to be in East Springfield? And of course, I'm just making all of that up. And they say, there wasn't any airport in East Springfield. And I will say to them, well, you know, I have an aeronautical chart from 1960 showing that it was.
Boy, do I have news for you.
And they will just say, I don't think there was an airport there. And that just shows you how oblivious somebody who isn't an aviation person can be to, you know, what we consider to be the general aviation airports. And even that phrase alone, when you say general aviation to a lot of non-aviation people, they don't know what that constitutes. They don't understand non-airline aviation, so to speak.
One of the most interesting aspects about learning about forgotten airfields is you start to recognize the areas a lot better. So when you're driving around and you see Airport Road, there's no airport there. Right. You know, there's houses and people live. Oh, I live on Airport Drive and there's no airport there. And you're like, well, I bet you there was. Let me pull up the website. Hang on one moment.
I've had people tell me before that if I ever, quote, run out of new things to research, I could just go to Google Maps in just about any town and search for Old Airport Road. And sure enough, there probably will be an Old Airport Road there. That's where the Old Airport used to be.
You can start identifying the cut in the trees, even in some places. You just look at the map and you know, that looks a little bit runway-esque. I could probably put an airplane down there if there wasn't a giant pine tree in the middle of it now. But
well, that brings up, though, the safety aspect. That's another motivator for me. You know, the original reason why the FAA even had the abandoned airfield symbol was that supposedly, you know, if there is a former airfield where the runway is still extant, that could have some, you know, dead stick landing benefit for a pilot. You know, better to put down a dead stick airplane on a closed runway than to put it down in a forest or, you know, on a row of houses. So that is the reason why. But in many cases, the FAA doesn't keep up, and they've continued to depict some abandoned airfields on the chart long after they've been built over. And that really is a safety hazard, because, you know, if your motor goes quiet and you were to look on the chart and go, oh, there's a former airfield there, and then you set up for a glide only to find out that there's townhouses there, that would really be a bad outcome. So that's another thing that has motivated me. And I've had people write in saying that they've been trying to get the FAA to remove a certain former airfield from the charts because of just that scenario sometimes.
I would assume that at this point, your site must be, you know, considered sort of prima facie evidence of, hey, if it's on the site, we ought to take it off the chart.
Well, not necessarily, because like I said, there are former airfields on my site where they are still extant, and it's sort of like time has stood still, and they would still be suitable for a landing. But then there are others, because that's one central theme of my website, is I always try to have then and now photos. So, I try to have photos of the airport or the airfield when it was in operation, and then I typically have, you know, a recent current day photo to show, you know, either what is still there or what has become of it. And in some cases, there are some where, you know, it's also very frustrating because the economics of general aviation are such that I've had some people write into me saying that how frustrating it is that some GA airport was closed 10 years ago because there was a property developer that was going to build houses. So they bought the property, closed the airport, moved out the FBO, and then their redevelopment deal, you know, went belly up because of interest rates or what have you. And then the former airport has just sat there. And I've had some people say, you know, what a shame it is that we can't use this airport anymore because they're not building houses on it and it's just sitting there.
You know, it's really funny you mentioned that, Paul, because just this afternoon, I came across the airport in the state of Washington, Kennewick, Washington, Vista Field, where I did my private check ride and found that it closed in 2013, I think. And, you know, when Grace was talking about Airport Road and Old Airport Road stuff, it was reminding me of that because there's sort of what looks like from the satellite photo, like an overpass road that bisects, you know, goes right across the runways. Oh. And it's called Crosswind Road. But otherwise, if the imagery I'm looking at is even remotely current, it's still obviously an airport, just has an overpass going over it. There's, you know, the runways are there where the X's are still visible. And granted, the imagery may be a little bit old, but it's not 12 years old, what I'm looking at Google Earth and Bing Maps and things like that. And it is sad. It's like, it's one thing to say, well, this used to be an airport, but now people are using it for other things and somebody made a lot more money and that's sad and I don't love it. But as you said, you just see it sitting there. It feels like it's going to waste. And now I'm just mad.
That's right.
And Hal, you and I had talked about this a while ago because you were showing photos of that airport that you found. What was the one that you recently looked up? And it has the plaque in front of it, which is really cool because some airports that are no longer there, they pay homage to the old airport that used to be there in some kind of way. And I mean, I found it in the littlest of places. There is actually an abandoned airfield in Grand Rapids, Michigan, or just northwest of it. And it is now a mall. But inside the mall, they have murals of the airport that used to be there, which I thought was just really interesting because it closed, I think, in the 90s or so. And so when they built the mall, and that was kind of a cute little, you know, nod to the airport and, you know, the development of it. But
yeah, that softens the blow just a little bit.
Just a wee bit.
You know, we've talked about, Grace and I have discussed, is it Glenview, the former Naval Air Station in Chicago? Oh, yeah. And that's a mall, but the control tower is sort of intact and there's statuary and, you know, some other stuff like that.
It's cool when they incorporate it into the infrastructure of like the airport that used to be there. Maybe they use old airport buildings as, you know, something.
Right. Yeah, it is. I mean, I'd certainly rather the airfield still be operating, but if it can't be, it's nice that at least they've paid some respects to it. And in some cases, I've had property developers who are going to be building a restaurant or building a bank or what have you, and they'll look to me for reuse permission because they are going to have a mural inside their building that shows what it used to be. So even though, you know, their business has no connection to aviation other than where it happens to be built. So that is nice, at least, to see that sort of thing.
You know, before we move on, I just want to take a minute and say thanks to our sponsor, Crew Chief Systems. Are you still relying on paper logs or manual spreadsheets to manage your aircraft? It's time to elevate your approach. Crew Chief Systems puts your airplane at the center of real-time aircraft asset intelligence, allowing you to fly safer, save time, and protect your aircraft's value. Crew Chief's intuitive platform unifies all your maintenance, compliance, and operational data, giving you instant access to your aircraft's full history, upcoming requirements, and real-time insights directly from your mobile device or computer. Whether you're a pilot, fleet manager, or mechanic, Crew Chief Systems helps you stay compliant, make smarter decisions, and keep your aircraft in peak condition. Visit crewchiefsystems.com to see how you can modernize your aircraft management. And as a special thank you to Green Dot listeners, save 15% for the lifetime of your Crew Chief GA subscription when you use coupon code GREEN15, that's GREEN15, at crewchiefsystems.com. Thanks again to Crew Chief Systems for really stepping up and helping us at EA keep this podcast going.
Now, we would be a little bit remiss if we didn't mention the most famous airfield that is now no longer with us is Meigs Field in Chicago, which is only appropriate to talk to Hal about considering you work with the flight simulator, which was, I think, the starting airport for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the default starting point airport from the earliest days, even before it was Microsoft Flight Simulator. And it was Bruce Hartwick and Sublogic and all these other things before Microsoft got involved publishing it in 1981. It was the default airport all the way through, would have been, let's see, at least Flight Simulator, what we call Flight Simulator 9, which was 2004. And then after it was shut down, we gave it to you still as an option in Flight Simulator X, even though it had been carved up in the middle of the night. And that was, I always kick myself that I never got the chance to fly in and out of Meigs other than virtually. But I was there once when it was an airport and then did visit shortly after the demolition. And I don't know if the statute of limitations on this is. I may or may not still have a few pretty big chunks of painted concrete or asphalt at home that might have been part of a taxiway or. Anyway, it's not like this is going on the internet where everybody's going to hear it and I'm going to get in trouble, right, for stealing a federal
property.
City of
Chicago is going to come after you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know where to find me, Mayor Daley. But anyway, it's a powerful thing.
Yeah, anybody who mentions Bruce Hartwick, that definitely proves that you do go way back in the in the earliest days of computers and aviation. Yeah,
and I was a 12-year-old customer when it first came out, and then some years later, spent about 15 years at Microsoft, 11 of it working on the simulator, and just immersed in that world.
Yeah, I mean, Meigs Field, certainly that is such a striking example, because that whole story of the mayor sending bulldozers in the middle of the night, it's just a, it's a bizarre example of the desire by some to remove airports. It's sort of the worst case scenario.
And yeah, the threat to general aviation, it's definitely, you know, still alive and well, and there's constantly airports that are always under threat. But, you know, I have to ask Hal, how many airports from Paul's website have you visited? Any abandoned airfields have you visited? Because I haven't, I just tallied it over here. I have an approximate number of airports that I have visited from his website.
You know, it's a great question. And I'll be honest, I don't have a number for you. I mean, I wrote down about a half a dozen of them that immediately came to mind. I have said to myself many times, I'm going to go back through my logbook in particular and see, you know, because, I'm what you call a long time, low time pilot, but I've been, you know, I've been doing it forever. And I want to go through and see how many aren't there anymore. Yeah. But I'll lay it all out on the table. I'm nervous about doing that because that's an emotional thing. It's a sad thing. It can be pretty, pretty depressing. You know, I'm still sort of recovering from finding out that the place where I did my private jet ride is gone. And I don't think, if I remember right, Paul, I don't think you've got that one on the site as of yet. Unfortunately, I did my private check ride in 1987, which, as you and I know, well before Grace was born, they didn't have cameras yet. So there are no pictures of me doing the check ride there or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, you know, obviously.
So you have no proof is what you're saying.
I have no proof that I was there, but it's in the logbook. But
you mentioned that, but that really is a serious aspect of documenting these is I've had, like you said, everybody has a camera in their pocket these days.
Right.
And when I'm flying around, I always take a picture. You know, here, I've never been here before. I'll take a picture of it. But I've had so many people that will send me an email and they'll send me a long textual narrative about an airport that I've covered, which is where they learned to fly. And you know, so much history there. And then I'll say, but do you have any pictures of it? And you know, I don't want to make people feel bad. And of course, you know, I get so many people writing back saying, I could kick myself, but you know, taking pictures and getting them developed back then. Right. Was expensive, and I was a starving you know, college student. I was, you know, really, and you know, we didn't have a camera in our pocket all the time.
That's absolutely right.
And I've also had people say, you know, it never occurred to me that the airport wouldn't be here forever. So I did have a camera, but I never thought to take a picture of my airport because I was assumed it would be here.
Yeah, they seem like they're permanent.
It's really, really sad to hear that.
So I've got to know, Grace, you have a number.
I have been to 7 that are listed on his website. All of them Michigan. I'm a serial Michigan abandoned airport hunter. You know,
it's actually on her EAA business card. It's strange that we can get that specific.
And what's your number, Hal? Of abandoned airfields that you've seen or that you thought
that
of?
Sort of thought of. It's actually going to be off the top of my head. It's going to be right in that same area. Now, some of those.
That's still unfortunate. Like that's, you know, that's a lot. It's a lot of stories.
Right. And I'm sure there's more out there and it's just a matter of taking the time to go through. But, you know, we mentioned Meigs and Glenview. One of the big ones for me was Roosevelt Field, of course.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that's, I just shared a picture from 20 some years ago with Grace of the plaque. Back then it was in the parking lot of a Circuit City. Now somebody somewhere has, you know, little known and abandoned Circuit City Stores website. Cause those they're pretty much long gone, at least in this country, but, really nice plaque showing this is where Lindbergh lifted off. And I think this is holy territory, but it's a shame that it's just in the grass, in a parking lot that nobody ever notices.
So, well, and that's so ironic that you mentioned Roosevelt Field because 45 minutes ago, right before the start of this conversation, I just added a new image to my Roosevelt Field entry. Because a reader of the site sent me.
It wasn't Hal, was it? He's trying to get a publication out right before the podcast.
But, a reader of my site sent me a priceless 1938 New York State Airport directory. And so I've just started to go through, and literally Roosevelt Field randomly was the very first one that I took some info and a diagram from out of this directory and updated my Roosevelt Field entry with it. So that's so ironic that you mentioned that.
That's awesome.
Just speaking quickly, very quickly of coincidences, one of the things, something else Grace and I have discussed since he just started at EAA was our oddball mutual interest in World's Fairs. And I just happened to see you had an update, I think it was on our forum site, maybe today or yesterday. And one of the ones you mentioned was one of the World's Fair heliports. Oh, that's so cool.
That's really an amazing entry, because I was sent a bunch of information from another one of the people who has been a longtime contributor of mine, about this bizarre looking building that was built with a heliport on its roof as an integral part of the New York World's Fair. And, you know, that was when, for a very brief period of time, you could actually get a scheduled airline helicopter service around a couple different points in the New York metro area. And that World's Fair heliport was one of them. And amazingly, the building remains there, although now it's been repurposed. But, you can very clearly see it's still the same very unusually designed building. So that really is a neat entry among the ones that I've done.
Well, and you can just imagine what it would have been like. 1964, you go to the roof of the Pan Am building and you get on the whatever the civilian designation is for the CH-46. Beautiful red, white, and blue twin rotor helicopters. And it's just, you're dressed to the nines, you're wearing your fedora and you're holding it as under the rotor wash, and you get on board the helicopter and it's, take me to the World's Fair. And I just, everything about that is fantastic and otherworldly, but we don't hear nearly as much about that, those little aviation slices of it. So it was, we were both really excited to see that, that heliport added just recently.
Yeah. That really was an amazing story. I was really glad to find so much material and to be sent so much material about that.
It's really great how many people contribute to your website. It makes my heart so happy that there's so many other people who are like-minded who also want to work to preserve such important aviation history. That's just local history. Sometimes it could be oral history. It could be a story of somebody's dad did flight training at one airfield that no longer exists. And it's really great that your website has the opportunity to preserve that forever on the internet. So it's really, really neat.
I've had people who send me their old aeronautical charts. Either they're clearing out their bookshelves, or they just realize that it doesn't have much value to them anymore, and I can share it. Back when my daughters were younger, I remember getting a phone call one time when I was at my office, and my daughter said, "Yeah, a bunch of airport crap just showed up on our front door." and that was her loving description of it. And I came home, and there was a stack of about five Xerox paper boxes, if you remember what those were, five Xerox paper boxes stacked up on my front doorstep that had been delivered from UPS. And I'm sure the UPS driver really, really loved that, because I can't imagine how much they weighed. And they were filled with just hundreds of musty old aeronautical charts.
Isn't that your favorite smell? Opening up an old aeronautic chart and you're like, oh, this smells like old.
Yeah, smells like old. It's right up there with old books and all the other good smells. Paula, it strikes me that there's really maybe only two kinds of people in the world. And there's the kind of people that will come to your site and say, oh my gosh, this is amazing. There goes my afternoon. This is fascinating and I'm crazy about it and I love it. And then there's the other people who just would shrug and never get it, no matter how hard you tried.
Right.
But it's
and there's actually a third category, because I have inevitably I have realtors or property developers contacting me because and one time I had somebody who told me that they think that Walmart's property acquisition office uses my website to do their targeting of where to build their next store.
Oh, boy.
Because there are so many entries on my site that end with "and then a Walmart was built there." Because, as you can imagine, unfortunately, an airport is a leveled, drained piece of property that, if you were going to build something like that, a lot of the site work has already been done for you. So it pains me to say that, but that is the case many times.
Have you considered inventing new states and fake cities and just launching a massive disinformation campaign?
So build Walmart here.
Yes, something a bit more subversive.
That's a great idea. That's never been suggested to me before.
I would love to take an opportunity to tell you a little bit about the impact that your website had on me with my local community, because without your website, I would have never known about the Acme Skyport. And we've had a couple of email correspondences. I'm sure it's not aplenty like some of your other contributors, but I emailed you a long time ago. This story goes back, I think, about 3 years. And little 22-year-old Grace really wanted to know more about this abandoned airfield that somebody had told her about at an EAA meeting. They said that there used to be an airport. That's where the EAA chapter started. And I'm like, what in the world are you talking about? I don't believe you. So I start doing some Googling. And of course, when you start searching that kind of stuff, your website very easily pops up. And I get to read for the first time about an airport where my EAA chapter had started. And it was the first time I'd ever gotten any information. And as I'm scrolling, somebody had put a photo of the EAA chapter signage saying, like, fly in here or pancake breakfast here, which was my first witness of, oh my gosh, we have history that goes back, you know, further than the 6 years that I had been involved with that chapter.
Right.
And I've always been very vocal here at EAA, my month and a half I've been here, about how passionate I am about my chapter's history, especially working within the chapters department. So what your website set forth for me was a whole adventure learning about my local aviation history and trying to track down names. And that would have never happened without the access of your website.
Wow.
On a happy-ish note, your website allowed for us to really do some more research, and somebody ended up buying the land back and making it back into a private airfield. So it's a private public use airfield now, but it one of the runways is no longer usable. So it's only a single runway. It used to be two runways, north, south, east, west. And the east, west one is the only one that is now still landable, but it's only about 1900 feet, if not even that, 1500 feet. So it's pretty short, but it's really unique to watch an airport kind of come back from the dead. That was an airport that was not landed on for over 25 years. And I can never help but just wonder who was the last person to take off from there. And that's a conversation that I know that Hal and I would always like to discuss with any airfields I'm sure we come across on your website. But, you know, who was here, who flew here, what kind of airplanes were here, and what kind of stories did they tell? And how, you know, especially with EAA, it comes full circle with that of, you know, really inspiring our chapter, which is over 60 years old. So,
wow, that is fantastic. And there are a few, I mean, very, very few, but there are some that are on my site that have come back from the dead. And I tell people, you know, just like I'm never happy to add one to my site, I'm always happy to find out that one no longer qualifies for my site because mm-hmm. it's been brought back alive. And there are some well-intentioned people who will sometimes write to me and say, I want to purchase and reestablish an airport. You know, do you have any idea of which one I could acquire? And sometimes those people are a little naive. But like you said, if there's more focused interest from somebody locally, that is great to see one that's brought back alive. That's fantastic.
Now, Paul, in a case like that, I'm assuming you sort of hang on to all of the information and keep a good archive and things because anybody know how valuable the history is. But do you remove the airport from your site? Do you just put a note saying, hey, it's back? Do you just sort of unpublish that page, or how do you do that?
I do. And you know, sometimes people disagree with me about that. But the reality is I do try to keep my site have a specific scope, that scope being former airfields. So I tell people, you know, I'm overjoyed to find out that somebody has reopened one. But I also have some people who sometimes disagree with my editorial decision about what the scope of my site is going to be, because sometimes I have somebody say, well, this Naval Air Station closed. And I'll say, well, it's actually a municipal airport now. And they'll say, well, that doesn't really matter. The important history is that it used to be a Naval Air Station, and that's closed, so it should be on your site. And I try to be a good amateur journalist, and I try to always have the philosophy that, you know, all history is important, that, you know, it's not just the military history that's important or the civilian history, vice versa. But overall, my rationale has always been that I cover airfields that are no longer in operation as airfields, whether they're military or civil or public or private or what have you. So the other reason why I do then remove one if it no longer qualifies under that kind of rationale is that the bandwidth and the storage space for my site is actually something that I pay for out of pocket, supplemented by some reader donations. So it's not free. And I did tell you that 26 years ago when it started, this all started with some free site hosting bandwidth that my internet service provider provided. Well, that was another thing that over the years, I very quickly outgrew that as there started to be more and more content on the site and more people started looking at it. So you you multiply the content by the number of people who are looking at it each day, and that ends up being a larger and larger chunk of bandwidth. So I did have to pretty quickly move to a paid site hosting service, and then after a couple of years, you know, upgraded the plan, and then eventually moved to a different site hosting provider. So long story short, you know, it is a finite amount of bandwidth and space that I have. So that's another reason why, you know, if something is no longer fitting the scope of my site, that I do remove it, because inevitably there's another one that's being suggested to me that does fit my scope. And that's the other ironic thing, is that I get a lot more contributed information that does fit the scope of my site than I even have the spare time to incorporate. So I've never run out of material, so to speak. And you know, sometimes people don't necessarily know that the site is really just a hobby. It's really basically a passion project. It's not my job, so to speak. So I don't get to work on it 40 hours a week. You know, I do. It's basically a spare time hobby that I fit in around other things. So that's my other constraint that I have to deal with and try to eke out the time and still try to focus on the niche of my site.
Well, Paul, it's a privilege both for Grace and I now as users and fans of the site to be able to say thank you for those efforts. And I'm sure we're doing so on behalf of a lot of our listeners and a lot of EAA members out there as well, who understand what a valuable resource it is. And it really means the world to a lot of people. And I'm especially glad that Grace had the chance to share her personal story with you about what that meant, because that's what led her to raise her hand and say, hey, let's get Paul on the show.
Yeah, so I'm so glad to be reconnected with Grace. And like I said, actually hear your voice as opposed to
just the email. Yeah, really. Thank you so much for offering such a great resource for us general aviation nerds to have.
Oh, you are welcome. I would toss out, you know, to any of your listeners that my email address is at the top of every one of my site's pages. And, you know, I always try to tell people overtly that it's a collaborative effort. So if you see an entry on here that you have pictures or information on, or if you know of another former airfield that you think would be applicable to, please email me and send me material, because I love getting new material that I can add to the site.
Well, Paul, my gosh, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, along with our ongoing thanks for the work you do on the site. That URL, again, is airfieldsfreeman.com, and Airfields Freeman, just like it sounds, that's all one word. People can go there, they can poke around, and they can see not only a fascinating niche, but truly one of the longer running ongoing sites on the internet. So, Paul, our thanks to you once again. Our thanks, as always, to our sponsor, Crew Chief Systems, for supporting this effort. And our biggest thanks of all go out to everyone out there listening. Just by listening to the show, by downloading it, by streaming it, you're making a difference and you're enabling us to keep going. And we really appreciate everyone who takes the time to leave a review, whether you just pick a number of stars, 5 out of 5 is always good, and write a review on any of the sites where you consume your podcast. You can also always send us feedback at feedback@eaa.org. You can leave comments on each episode's homepage, which lives at inspire.eaa.org. And we'll make sure to have a link directly to Paul's site there as well, if you missed the URL. Speaking of reviews, we haven't done this in quite a while, but I did come across one today that we have not shared on the show. And this is from Amazon. It's from TJ Thompson, who gave us those 5 out of 5 stars. And believe me, if there was an interesting one where they gave us 1 out of 5, I'd read that too. But we just don't get a lot of those. Anyway, so here's TJ Thompson's review real quick. The Green Dot Aviation Podcast with Hal Bryan, Chris Henry, and various others, like you, Grace, is one of the best podcasts out there in any category. All are knowledgeable and entertaining, covering the fun and the tragic. A wide variety of guests and interviews is just a treasure for any aviation enthusiast. Great show, and one of the few podcasts I will listen to episodes more than once. Give it a try. So, TJ, if you happen to be listening to this episode, thank you so much for taking the time to leave us that review. It was a while back, but sorry we missed it and didn't get to it sooner. But with that, thanks again to Paul. Thanks to Grace for joining me for her first hosting experience and doing a fantastic job. Thanks once again to everyone out there listening and to Crew Chief Systems for keeping the lights on. And we'll look forward to catching up to you next time when you're cleared to land on the green dot.